You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
It's not often on The Dan Nichols Show that I do an interview that I really wish I wasn't doing, and that is for the very best possible reasons, because my guest this week should not be anywhere near my studio here in Johannesburg. He should instead be out in India preparing to take South Africa to victory in a World Cup. But sadly, professional sport does not come with sentiment, and instead nursing a collarbone that is knitting its way back to full function is Donovan Ferreira. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. Like you say, should be in India, but got the honour to be sitting here next to you. So,
well, look, I think most people would rather be here than living it up in a five-star hotel in India waiting to represent their country in a World Cup.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's not often that you get one or two invites to come to the show, but yeah, let's leave that for off camera, you know.
The space you're going through at the moment is something that every single athlete goes through several times during the career, some more irregularly than others, but whenever it does happen, it's never ideal. But to break your collarbone just a couple of weeks before you're ready to leave South Africa, head out, represent your country, go to a World Cup. On the outside, you're looking brave and strong and keeping a smile in place. But inside, that's a gut-wrenching thing to go through.
You know, it's something that you just have to, you have to make peace with it. If you keep eating yourself up inside, you know, you get into a bad mental space. The timing of it is obviously unfortunate, not being ready for the World Cup, which is obviously a massive honour. Being part of that squad and going to represent your country at a World Cup is something that I've dreamed of and that a lot of kids that dream of. And, you know, the difference you can make in people's lives just representing your country is obviously something special. But, yeah, I've kind of got to the conclusion that everything happens for a reason. Maybe I don't understand it now, but I think my body told me now I need to take a break, because as a sportsman, you just keep going and you never really want to pull the plug and say, you know, I need to take off, or with all these leagues happening and all these games happening, you always just want to play. You want to keep going. So I think my body said to me, you have to stop now.
What's the process? Who breaks the news to you? How do you find it out? Is there a designated person who delivers bad news to players and the team?
Not really. It was a bit of a frustrating process because I didn't hear from them for a short while. But yeah, I mean, I got the call from the coach. He obviously just let me know because I went for scans the next day. Obviously, collarbone fractured, which is quite unusual. The physio at JSK is always like, yeah, you're always getting the weirdest injuries and the most freakiest injuries, because the previous year I tore my side off the bone. So that was also, and coincidentally, it was also the last home game for the JSK. So they said to me, next year you're not playing the last home game. So yeah, the coach just called me and said, obviously, unfortunately, I heard the bad news. Yeah, there's not much we can do. So yeah, unfortunately, you can't go to the World Cup. So I was kind of waiting for it, but I was kind of hoping.
Did you kind of know that was what was going to happen?
Well, I told them, obviously, when I fell, and I could feel that there's something wrong here, and I heard a bit of a click when I fell. I was trying to convince myself maybe it was my neck or something, my back just kicking in place. But when I went out to bat and I swung for one ball and I heard like a noise coming over my collarbone, I was like, no, I can't risk this. So then I kind of knew, you know, it was more serious than what I thought it would have been initially. So, yeah, I kind of made an assumption that I'm not going to go to the World Cup. But the biggest thing for me was I didn't want to get an operation. So, yeah, I'm grateful that was the case. And now it's just a waiting game, 4 to 6 weeks. Just the frustrating thing is I can't do anything. I can't play golf. I just have to be... Well,
this is the eighth time you phoned me. Can I please come on the show? I've got nothing else to do.
Exactly. Exactly. When I saw it was only 45 minutes, I was a bit upset.
Can we do a double episode?
Exactly.
The perspective that you need in professional sport, that understanding that with extraordinary highs will come really difficult lows, is probably one that you can juggle a little better than most, because I still remember so clearly the first time we met properly was when you came in to join me in studio. We were at Supersport and the auction had been done the night before, and the biggest story coming out of the auction was that this cricket gear salesman who worked part-time as Faf du Plessis' driver had been bought for 5.6 million rand, and people are Googling Darren Ferreira. No, no, it's not Darren Ferreira. It's David Ferreira. No, it's Donovan Ferreira, 5.6 million rand. I think when you arrived and you'd stopped off along the way to buy a Bugatti and then arrived in the car park, and there was still this slightly glazed look to you as you were trying to take in what had happened 24 hours before, as life had just been turned upside down.
Yeah, no, that moment I think is a moment I'll never forget. Watching that TV, and it felt like it's a bit of a dream, because you know, you're sitting there and there's a picture of you on the screen and you just see these people putting up paddles going at your name, you know. But yeah, I think, you know, dealing with highs and lows is obviously something that a lot of sportsmen sometimes struggle with, because in the moment you don't understand. I mean, you know, a setback for me was obviously losing a contract and having to work. So at least now, I know it sounds bad, but at least I'm only missing a World Cup. I'm not, you know, having to go and work or losing my contract or having to change my profession. So, you know, I think that prepared me kind of for this. If I look back, you know, in that moment, I was upset. I didn't want to play cricket anymore. I was done. But then the game somehow brought me back. So now I think if I look back, I learned a lot of lessons out of that. And I think that's why I'm more at ease now with this decision, because or with this decision that they made, you know, for me missing the World Cup. So, yeah, I don't know if I look back in a couple of years, you know, maybe I would say, okay, I understand, you know, losing another contract or missing out again or getting another injury, that it's okay because it will pass as well. And it's about staying positive, you know, as much as you can. Sometimes you need to fake it till you make it. But, yeah, you can't beat yourself up. You know, I always say I always want to control what I can control. And this is kind of out of my control. Like, it happened. It's about just being really disciplined in terms of getting back onto the park, being stronger, being fitter, being ready again, being hungry to perform again. So that's kind of where my head is at the moment. Some days are harder than others, but yeah, at all costs, like it's been a good, you know, 2-3 years since that day, and I've been very blessed with the contracts that I've gotten from there, the opportunities I've gotten to see the world, to play with other legends, to grow my game, to inspire people. So, yeah, I'm very grateful for where I am now, and hopefully it can continue for a long time coming.
I'd venture that gratitude is a little easier to sense and to take hold of because there is an IPL on the horizon. You have in the last while captained your country for the first time. You've played international cricket all around the world. The life of Donovan Ferreira has been pretty damn good for the kid who wanted to play cricket. But if we go back to that pre-SA20 time where literally the closest you were coming to playing international cricket was driving Faf du Plessis around Joburg for some photo shoots, and you were having to ask for some time off as and when you got a game for the Titans. And yeah, you were somebody who wanted to play professional cricket. And at that stage, it didn't look that promising. It didn't look that exciting. How close were you to maybe saying goodbye to cricket? How worried were you that, you know, maybe this cricket dream has run its course?
Well, actually, funnily enough, I will never forget sitting, I was at my mate Yuri Snyman's house, and I said to him, I'm done.
And you'd made that call?
I made that call. I sat there by his kitchen counter, and I said to him, I'm done. And he said, no, you're not done. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's out of my control. I'm 22 or 23. At that stage, you think,
oh, yeah, middle age.
Yeah, exactly.
You poor thing.
Exactly. You think like, okay, well, you know, at least I studied. And I was like, I need to start building myself up to actually get a future in the business world. So I was done. So it's not about how close I was. I was actually done. I called coaches and I said, you know what, I'm not playing club cricket anymore. I didn't play cricket at all. I went to work. I was doing a bit of coaching still, but obviously when I got a full-time job, I had to call that quits as well. So effectively, I was done. I'm very thankful for my boss for allowing me to go and play, because I'll never forget they got a few injuries as well. So I got my break due to an injury. and it was in a bubble in Kimberley, I think, or in Bloemfontein, one of those two. And I played and I did well. And I just had that mindset of, you know what, this could be my last game, because after this I'm done. Like, if I don't perform here, it's over. So I went out and I enjoyed it. Like those three or four games I played over there, I just enjoyed my cricket because I never knew if I was going to cross this rope again in a professional setup. So, yeah, looking back, it's crazy. But I'm that type of person, you got to give 100% whatever you do. So, you know, you can't just keep going. At some point, and different guys make their decisions at different stages in their lives, when they want to stop, when they want to move on to something else. And it's a very difficult decision because, you know, thinking back, I'm like, when I studied, I just did it to get a degree. I didn't do it for a specific reason, you know, that I want to do this job or that job like some other people who don't play sport. And when I was looking for a job, that was interesting because I spoke to a couple of agents and a couple of people that I knew. And they said, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. What is there to do? I can play cricket. I studied business management. What can I do with a business management degree? So, you know, we kind of have a bit of tunnel vision when you're playing sport because that's all you focus on. That's kind of your life. And then when you get out of that tunnel, it's like, whoa, the world, there's a lot going on. And it's not as simple as what we think it is, just going to training. You know, there's obviously different pressure to deal with, but it's not easy always working for a boss. Sometimes he's a bit moody. Sometimes he's a bit grumpy. Sometimes you've got to do stuff you don't want to do. And you just have to put a smile on and be grateful for that opportunity. But, yeah, I think I learned a lot. You know, a lot of stuff I learned in sport also came through over there, the discipline, you know, working hard, dealing with failures, because as a salesperson or, you know, driving Fuff around, getting his bats if he's a bit late or doesn't rock up, you know, then, then you just keep going on and just keep fighting. So, yeah, in both of those spheres, I think they kind of, you know, you learn a lot of lessons working. You know, made me appreciate sports a bit more because working 9 to 5 in an office job is tough. Sometimes you have to sit there if you don't have much to do and look like you're doing something. And other times,
a lot of people are very good at doing that.
Exactly. So now I'm very grateful that I can sit here on a Monday morning at 10:30 and, you know, go home after this and do nothing instead of going to a job or going to sit in an office. So yeah, it's broadened my perspective of life, I guess, because I think a lot of us in sport, if we're honest, we're just a bit narrow-minded in terms of that it's just sport, and that's all it is.
Just a couple of very slight turns away from my guest this week is Donovan, assistant manager of Ferreira Hardware, the way these paths go.
Exactly.
And instead of talking to you about what wrench I should be using for my upcoming DIY project, I can ask you about a space that I know you have embraced beyond just, well, it is the greatest platform of our time for any cricketer, with due apology to World Cups or Test matches, as I still believe should be on top, but that is the IPL and the chance to go over and soak up what is just so much more than a space to play a sport, because the combination of cricket as religion and then the quite extraordinary world that is India that you've now had a chance to discover something of and I think fall in love with, that would not be going too far, has added this wonderfully rich dimension, not just to Donovan Ferreira the cricketer, but also to Donovan Ferreira the person.
Yeah, IPL, fortunately I've been picked. Unfortunately, I haven't played much over there, so that's been a bit of a frustrating part for me. But, you know, being in the mix over there, being part of such a setup, you know, like you say, that's probably the best tournament in the world. Not probably, it is the best tournament in the world. So from a cricketing perspective, you know, there's so much talent over there. Even the net bowlers, even just being around in that setup, you know, you grow as a cricketer. But away from cricket, I always tell people it's a good culture shock, because, you know, we're living in the glamorous 5-star hotels and getting all the nice food and stuff like that. But when you open your window, there's slums, there's people on the street. So the difference between what we're experiencing and what the normal person over there experiences is tremendous. So, you know, coming back to South Africa, you actually start appreciating the smaller things, you know, just the good weather, clean air, because there's all those things that those people are going through, you know, having the freedom of just moving around without people idolizing you, without people wanting to take photos. And you can't explain that to people because everyone's like, oh, no, shame. You know, they want to take a photo. They look up to you. But if the millionth person tries to take a selfie with you, it gets a little frustrating. So you're dealing with so much over there. You're dealing with the food, with the water, with the air, with, you know, not being able to travel freely, not being able to go to the mall. You know, you have to take security with you. So it sounds all great. It sounds all glamorous. But if you're actually in that setup, that presents challenges in itself. But all of us always want to go back. It never gets the better of us. We, you know, 3 months in India, you know, that middle part gets a little long. But, you know, once you start getting in the games, in the swing of things, traveling, training, you know, actually developing your game, it's amazing. Like, it's a tournament that's why it's the best in the world, because look at the following, look at the amount of money that's in it, look at all the sponsors, look at all the organizers. Those teams are not buying teams in other leagues for no reason, you know, because they're developing something that is out of this world, and it just keeps growing. You think, like, oh, it can't get bigger. How's IPL going to get bigger? Then it just gets longer. There's more teams. There's more sponsors. There's more venues. So if you look at all of that, it's something that you need to be there to experience. I always tell people, come to India. Come watch the IPL. Like, if you think the crowds in SA20 are crazy, come to India.
Wait
and
till
then,
you get the IPL.
Then you will start experiencing what noise is. You know, a lot of people complain about the whistles at Joburg. If you go to Chennai, then it's even 200 times worse than what we experience at the Bullring. So, yeah, I think it's opened up a different world, and that's why everyone wants to be there. That's why everyone keeps putting their name in the hat and hope you can get bought, because, you know, the potential and the upside of the IPL is massive. And it's like I said a few times now, it's the best tournament in the world. Once you get a break there, once you play over there, you don't know, it can take you to the next height. I mean, look at where Henrik Claassen is now, you know, if you look at his journey as well. You know, it's extraordinary. So, and everyone always speaks about the IPL. There's all these other leagues that are available to play in, but IPL is always the main one in the year. So, yeah, hopefully I can get a chance to play a bit more. But when I get that chance, I just need to take it.
I remember Ryan Rickleton on the show last year talking about, as you say, not being able to go to a restaurant 100 yards down the road from the hotel because of the crowds, and then getting back to South Africa and successfully getting onto the Gau train and getting back, and nobody other than the cursory glance at immigration was remotely interested in his return to South Africa. How much of a mind bender was it that first time over, and discovering that having left South Africa to literally no fanfare bar a few family and friends wanting to wish you well, and now arriving in a country where people can recite your batting average from the first time you played a game and know every detail that the internet will give up about you, as suddenly you've just become proper royalty?
Yeah, so I think for me, when I went over, I was still on the cusp of quitting my job, so I don't think we didn't sell bats in India, so they don't know who the salesperson is. You know, so I think for me, in the beginning, it was quite nice because no one knew who I was. Sometimes you sit there and you're like, oh, don't they want to take a photo with me? But now looking back, I'm like, that was the best.
Those were wonderful days.
That was the best time ever over there. So, you know, you go through these phases, and then you see guys like Faf or Josh Butler or Claassen or whatever, and they can't move. They can't leave the hotel. And then you're like, oh, this is so nice. It feels like I'm free. I can go to the coffee shop. I can go. I remember Josh Butler sending me a message, can you please buy me this at the shop or whatever the case is, because he's stuck in the hotel room. So the first year or two, you know, you could do stuff, but the more people recognize you, and if you allow one person to take a photo, then it's kind of like chaos, because then everyone just arrives. So yeah, I think the freedom that we have here in South Africa, I feel sorry for those national players in the Indian team, because I don't know what they do. I don't know where they can go, because if they recognize us like this, what must they do with those guys?
There's a great story Sachin Tendulkar tells when he played his 100th test match. He had a long-term relationship with Fiat, and from the broader parent company, Ferrari delivered a gift of a car, and he spoke about how he liked to drive his car between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, because that was when the crowd outside his house was at its smallest.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's indicative of where this IPL cricket space is. It affords you limited glimpses of life outside of the hotel, changing room, field, practice session, you know, the occasional restaurant. But have you been able to see a bit more of India, to soak up some more of it, to get a sense of India beyond just the immediate walls of the IPL?
Yeah, so when I played for Rajasthan, Rajasthan is quite an interesting city. They've got a lot of forts and a lot of, you know, massive buildings and ancient buildings that I was fortunate enough to go and explore with a couple of security guys around me. But that was quite interesting to see all those markets over there with the carpets and the gems and people just walking around over there. You know, a lot of tourists as well exploring the rich history of India. Dharamshala is always nice because it's kind of there in the mountains, so we usually go on a hike there or go swim in that ice cold water. So you're there, you walk for 2 hours to go dip in the water for 1 minute or 30 seconds, and then you're out of there because that water from the snow is freezing. And then when I played for Delhi, it's a city life, you know. So there's quite a few restaurants, but like I say, when you walk out there for the first time, it feels like you're smoking cigarettes or something because the air is so polluted, which is not great. A lot of people struggle. A lot of players struggle over there with that. So played one or two golf courses, but I mean, there's not really much time as well to go and explore because it's such a big country. And when you're traveling, when you're playing, when you're training, when you have downtime, you just want to relax. A lot of people, whenever we tour India or England or whatever the thing, wherever the case is, they always say, "Oh, why don't you go and explore?" And I tell them, "I'm there for work. I'm not there on holiday." So, you know, it takes the toll. It takes the toll out of you when you have to train, when you have to gym, when you have to travel. You know, the travel days is a full day. Wake up, travel to the airport, fly, travel to your next hotel, settle in over there. So it's not just all glamour and all, you know, glory over there. Obviously, when you're playing and the cricket side of things is amazing, but, you know, you have to kind of force yourself to go do stuff, else you can just find yourself in a rut, just sitting in the hotel the whole time, waiting for the next training, waiting for the next game. But, yeah, I think a lot of guys also sleep quite late, because trainings are usually in the evenings, so you kind of stay on South African time. So you try to sleep half your day away so that you don't wake up at 6 in the morning, go to breakfast, and then you're only training at 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night and get back to the hotel at 11. So then your day gets a bit long. So if you're waking up at 11 or 12, then your day kind of feels normal.
So you basically got to revert to being a teenager on holiday.
100%, yeah. Then you want to go sleep. When you're a teenager, you never want to sleep. You're always fighting when your parents want to take your phone or, you know, having to not play games or stay up with your mates. So then that's where the fight comes in. But when you're on tour, you wish your parents are there to just take your phone or put off the TV or something like that, so you just get some rest.
What about the food? My chief delight when I'm traveling is the food and the wine and discovering the culture of wherever I happen to be going. Are you guys on quite strict control in terms of what you're allowed to eat or drink, or do you get to enjoy some of the more local fare?
So in India, we don't try and be too adventurous because, you know, it's not fun, you know, having a runny tummy or making the toilet your best friend, if I can say that. It takes quite a lot out of you. So they kind of advise you, you know, not to explore too much, you know. But the more you go there, the more brave you get. You start using the tap water to brush your teeth the first time you use bottled water. So you kind of build up to being more brave. Some guys are very adventurous. Some guys are not. I find it quite tough because I don't really like spicy food. So everything in India is spicy and there's masala and everything. Your omelet feels like it's on your toast. It feels like it's in your coffee. It feels like it's everywhere. So, but I have tried a little bit, you know, but like I say, I'm not too adventurous because I think if you get Delhi Belly, then then you revert back to toast and and pizzas. But in the hotels we stay, the food, there's quite a big variety of food. There's a lot of continental options. sometimes you actually pick up a bit of weight over there because you're just eating pizzas and burgers and trying to stay away from, you know, more the local cuisine. But like I say, we do sometimes feel brave, and when they give a recommendation, because the waiters over there are also quite passionate and quite enthusiastic about their food. So they're like, sir, come try our local food, try our local cuisine, try this, try that. So then you're like, okay, fine, fine, I'll try it. And then you either like it or you don't. But there's their food, there's a lot of flavors. It's very rich, so it's something to get used to. But yeah, like I say, once you get sick once, then you revert back to just
become
eating
a little more hesitant.
Yeah.
I've been trying to persuade Stephen Fleming, your Joburg Super Kings coach, that for the Chennai Super Kings, he needs an official team sommelier to guarantee more consistent success. He hasn't given me the job yet, but I remain hopeful. I'm not sure it'll happen this year, but I am very keen to get out to do an IPL experience, but also to do a broader Indian experience within that context. So coming to cheer on a few games, but also doing a bit of exploring and adventuring. And I'll bring a couple of moustaches, some wigs and some dark glasses to allow you to come out and join me. And we can go undercover and see a bit of India, which you will be doing soon, not sadly in the context of a World Cup. And for that, I'm desperately sorry, not just because as a friend, I would have loved to have had you there, but as a South African cricket fan, I would have loved to have had you there. But you have a very balanced approach to this. And I think you know that there is still so much more cricket and so many more adventures to come as you look beyond this tenure, this IPL, watching the World Cup from the sidelines. Is there still quite a long cricket journey ahead, do you feel? And have you started to think what in that dream 9-to-5 office job might be life post-cricket when you decide that you'd like to move on, whether it be in the next few years or like Faf and Imran when you're in your early 60s?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, you don't want to think too far ahead. So I think the space of cricket and especially the T20 landscape has provided opportunity to really earn a good income. So I think if you're lucky enough, or you know, the cards fall right and you earn enough money and you actually work well with your money, I think it takes a lot of pressure off that 9-to-5 job when you're done. But you never know what the world and what's lying ahead. Because you could get injured, you could lose your contracts, you could, you know, your career could make a U-turn, which obviously every cricketer hopes it doesn't happen. But I think for me it's about, you know, maximizing the opportunities that I have now, maximizing the potential there is to kick on. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be part of, you know, all the tournaments basically in the world that you can play in a year. You know, you can usually play 3 or 4 tournaments, and luckily my calendar is full for the next year or 2 years. So I'm very grateful about that. And it's really about staying in the present. I think a lot of times in life or in sport, you get ahead of yourself and you're like, oh, it would be amazing to be there. But you actually forget that the process that you're in now and the tournament that you are at now actually is a stepping stone to get there. You know, it's the same thing that our psychologist Dave Reed at the Joburg Super Kings say. When you get to finals, it's just another game on a big stage. You know, but because in that mindset, you're actually just thinking about the same processes that you have when you're playing a group stage game or your first game, or, you know, when you're in form or out of form. So it's really important to stick to that, because if I'm thinking about, oh, in a couple of years' time, I have to go work or whatever the thing is, then it just dampens your mood now, and you're not setting yourself up for failure, but you hopefully want to make enough money and build enough connections that when it gets to that point, it's an easy transition. You got a bit of a problem if it's a difficult transition, then you got to go look at yourself in the mirror, I think, for me personally. But everyone's journey is different, and the thing is, no one person can, you know, exactly be in your shoes. So you can listen to the older guys, you can listen to guys' advice. You know, I definitely don't know if I'm going to be playing at the age of 60 like Imran and Faf, but, you know, it's special that they can do that. I mean, they're still competing, they're still dominating. So, you know, I think when you get to that age and you can't compete or you can't keep up with the youngsters, then you need to pull the plug. But both of those two especially Pfaff. I think if you look at him running around the field diving, he's moving better than some of us at, in our 20s. So, you know, kudos to him. You know, take my hat off to him that he can keep pushing. But I think for me, you know, it's just about taking every moment and trying to maximize it because, you know, things can change really quickly, as I've experienced as well. You can lose everything really quickly, or you can get the up curve really quickly. And once you get that up curve, you need to maintain and you actually keep inspiring and keep, you know, working hard to become better, because you can easily just fall on that trap and say, okay, I'm here now. It's just going to happen. I just need to keep playing to stay in the team. And usually when you do that, you just slide off a bit. And then, you know, it's kind of like you either do a reality check and you wake up and you start working hard again, or you just keep going down on that downhill. And then it's really hard to come back up. I always tell guys, once you have a certain reputation, or, you know, you've worked your way into a dip, it's really hard to convince people or to get back out of it, because the performances is not just one or two anymore. It becomes three or four, you know, and then in the odds of sport, you're not performing four out of four times. You know what I'm saying? It's maybe one out of four times, especially in certain roles in cricket. So it's really important to be switched on and play every game kind of like it's your last game, like I did with my collarbone. Some guys are saying, oh, you shouldn't have dove for the ball. And I'm like, how can I just decide which ball I'm going to die for? You know, you got to give 100% at all times. And that's how I play the game. That's how I've been brought up. So, yeah, I would always give 100%, even if it has to be another injury or whatever. And I'll go try and, you know, go, like I did, try and go bat for the team, or, you know, really make sure that I'm injured instead of just being precautious and, you know, taking not the easy option, but the safe option.
That's what's got you to where you are and given you this wonderfully resurgent last few years. Before we wrap, I must ask you one very specific cricket question. In a period of time that's seen you represent your country, captain your country, which is such a great honour and such a well-deserved one, what is the innings that stands out of all of the many you've had the chance to delight us with, that even Donovan Ferreira, when no one's looking, is quietly jumping onto YouTube for the highlights from?
I kind of look back to that game. I got injured because I hit two out of the Wanderers. So it's always nice going back to see that, because that's not something that, you know, it always gets spoken about at training. Oh, who can hit it onto the roof? You know, it's kind of like a, you know, a little bit of a contest between men, you know, kind of, let's see who's the strongest, let's see who's the biggest, let's see who can hit it the furthest. So I kind of go back to that, but then on the flip side, I got injured that game as well. So it didn't end really well. But I think a game that stands out to me is my debut for South Africa against Australia. I scored 48. You know, playing for your country and representing your country is a massive honour, but it comes with a lot of responsibility and a lot of nerves. So when you're walking out there, your heart's pumping, you need to try to stay calm, you need to act like, oh, I've got this. Meanwhile, you're there thinking in your head, oh, I can't mess this up now. So that inning stands out at Kingsmead. But yeah, I think, you know, I always tell people when I'm batting, it's always going one or the other way. You know, it's going to be sixes or it's going to look bad. It's never going to look pretty. You know, a lot of people always joke with me and say I'm an IT specialist because I just hack when I bat. So they say, call me a hacker. But when it comes off, it's exciting. So,
Certainly is. You do have one big comeback game on the horizon, because Aidan Nicol is looking forward to a front garden cricket rematch. I think the last time together with Albie and Pfaff and Stephen Fleming, there was an almighty clash in our front garden. Most of the windows are now fixed. So we'll have you back for that one soon. But the one we're more looking forward to is just seeing you back on the field properly and getting out there. And as heartbreaking as it is to not be at a World Cup, there's so much great cricket still to come. And we're going to sit back and enjoy just as soon as that happens.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hopefully you've put up lights now, because last time it was a bit dark when we were batting. You know, when he was batting,
Aidan just switched them off, that's all. He's like his mother. He's a shrewd, shrewd type.
At least he's saving a bit of electricity.
He is, so indeed.
Look at the positive side. No, but thanks for having me. I can't wait to get back. Can't wait to get back training. That's why I'm wanting to just get x-rays done about every day, so that I can see maybe this thing's healed. You know, there's a miracle that's gone on. But yeah, it's just about staying patient and actually becoming, you know, getting ready to perform again, because you don't want to be there thinking about your shoulder or thinking about your injury, because that will just dampen your performance and dampen the energy that you can provide. I play hard. I can't think about my shoulder. Can I dive this way? Can I dive that way? You know, as a sports person, when you're there, you just go hard. But yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It is always an absolute pleasure. Swift recovery. And if for some reason it doesn't quite work out, there's always that paint salesman job that awaits for you afterwards. He's one of the most exciting talents in cricket at the moment. Gee, he hits the ball a long way. He's going to be doing so again soon. Sadly, not at this Cricket World Cup, but back in the IPL, many more SA20s and many more games in South African colours to come for one of the great fairy tales of South African cricket. He had given up the game, bounced back, has now captained his country, travelled the world and worn the green and gold with great pride. My special guest on the Dan Nicholls Show this week, Donovan Ferreira.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.